It's time to go back to school with Professor Fish, America's only show dedicated to college athletics on a national level.
Oh, man, I think the clock is slow.
University of Fish. Class is now in session.
I don't feel tardy.
Here's the professor, Tim Fisher.
It's Saturday morning. It's a great college football day. We hadn't even started the first game today, and already...
Second down to 10. Donald's under pressure. The ball is loose. It's recovered by Washington State at the 18-yard line. Jahad Woods delivered the hit. Derek Moore on the recovery. Donald coughs it up with 1:26 to play, and it's Washington State ball. The Cougars have the lead, and Martin Stadium has come unglued.
This crowd isn't dying down for Luke Falk. Despite his best wishes, he drops to the right knee again, raises both arms high in the air, mobbed by his teammates. The bench is empty. Washington State prevails. They have knocked off the USC Trojans. The party on the Palouse has begun. 30-27, the final.
And if you happen to be listening to Drive Time Sports yesterday afternoon, when Ryan and Kaufman and I were talking about our bold predictions for the weekend, yeah, there were some Broncos, there were some Rockies, and then I threw out Washington State beating USC last night, and they did that. Congratulations to Coach Mike Leach and the Washington State Cougars. I think they're going to be a force to be reckoned with all season long. We'll be talking with someone from them next week because that was a huge game. But the elephant in the room, actually it's the elephant all over the country, the FBI investigating NCAA basketball. No school has been hit harder by this than the University of Louisville. Here's President Greg Postel.
I would say that I was more angry than embarrassed. Obviously, embarrassment is part of it as well. But I think people who have watched what the University of Louisville has been busy doing in calendar year 2017 will understand that we have been working day and night, committed to make sure this place is a wonderful place for our students and our faculty and staff. And we're making a tremendous amount of progress. And when something like this happens, it makes me angry that we have more work to do to get where we're going to get. It's not going to prevent us from getting where we want to get, but it's another stumbling block, and yes, I was angry about it. There are different employers for the two individuals. They have different contracts, and our goal in all processes is to honor the contracts of our employees and to honor the university's HR policies.
And what the president, Greg Postel, is talking about is, of course, Rick Pitino. Rick Pitino, well, he's not gone, officially gone, from the University of Louisville. He's on administrative leave. And what that means is they're waiting till the investigation is completely finished into the FBI's investigation. When you're being investigated by the FBI, it can't be good. Something is amiss if you're being investigated by the FBI. And also, of course, Athletic Director Tom Jurich was put on paid leave. So, Pitino not getting paid, and Jurich on paid leave, and all this is being reviewed by the Board of Trustees there at the University of Louisville. And so we'll have to see what comes of all this, if there's going to be any criminal charges, because some people already been arrested. Here are the schools that have been impacted by this investigation. Kobe, Alabama, Kobe Baker, a men's basketball administrator, he resigned after Athletic Director Greg Byrne initiated an internal review of its men's basketball program in response to the scandal. So what does that tell you about Greg Byrne? He knew he was guilty. He knows he's going to get popped in this investigation, so he just jumped out. He jumped ship. The University of Miami, president of Miami, acknowledged the basketball program is subject to the investigation. Already told you about Louisville. You know, he's Pitino on unpaid leave, which means he's been, in effect, fired, according to his attorney. CBS Sports' Gary Parrish wrote that Pitino left Louisville with no choice but to fire him after his involvement in the past recruiting scandals. But Pitino plans to fight the charges. And I told you about Tom Jurich. He is going to be... he is fired. He's on paid administrative leave, so he's at least still getting money. Chuck Person, former NBA player and Auburn alum, was accused of handling more than $141,500. He was suspended without pay. Coach Bruce Pearl, not named in the report. This is, of course, being from the Auburn University, and the program is already being impacted by losing a high-profile recruit and offering to give refunds to season ticket holders. Arizona assistant coach Emmanuel Book Richardson is accused of paying a player identified only as Player 5 $5,000 in bribe money to sign with the Wildcats. Richardson, he's been suspended with pay. At USC, Southern Cal, they lost in football last night. Well, they're losing in basketball, too, because USC assistant Tony Bland, he's charged with conspiracy to commit bribery, soliciting a bribe and wire fraud. He's been charged with providing $9,000 cash payments to the families of two current USC players and has been suspended. Oklahoma State, you're guilty as well. Assistant coach Lamont Evans, he's accused of receiving at least $22,000 in bribe money to exert his influence over certain student-athletes at Oklahoma State and South Carolina, where he was also an assistant before leaving for Oklahoma State. He's been fired by Oklahoma State. And South Carolina, just talked about Lamont Evans. He's accused of accepting bribe money while he is there. Who else is impacted? Jim Gatto, the director of Adidas Global Sports Marketing, he's accused of paying families of two high-profile recruits to play for Adidas-affiliated schools. One of those schools, of course, Louisville. Money exchanged with the two families was $100,000 and $150,000. Merle Code recently left Nike for Adidas. He was the right-hand man for Gatto, involved in many of the exchanges, according to the complaint. Also, Jonathan Brand Augustine, president of League Initiative, director of Adidas-sponsored program. He helped funnel and hide money through that youth basketball program. Also involved and connected to the recruitment of an unidentified 2018 player who is being courted by a number of high-profile schools. Munish Sood, he's a financial advisor, along with others. The U.S. Attorney's Office alleges he was a power broker in helping move approximately $250,000 with the help of Gatto, you know, the director of Adidas I just talked about. Rashawn Michael, he's a representative of Thomas Bespoke Clothing, a former NCAA referee involved most intensely with dealing with Chuck Person there at Auburn. Now, where should all the blame go in all of this? Now, one of the most outspoken people, Charles Barkley, he had this to say.
And your question is, who's to blame?
On the whole college basketball thing, yeah.
The answer is all of the above. Everybody's got dirty hands in this whole thing. ESPN, which I love, the money they make on college basketball, myself and CBS, what we make on March Madness, what the NCAA makes on all these sports, the shoe companies who funnel kids to certain schools, their hands are dirty. I mean, there's no, and the kids who take the money, they don't have to take that money. So there's nobody who has got clean hands in this whole scenario. It's a dirty business. It's unfortunate. But let's don't act like we can't pass the buck to any particular group in this thing. The NBA's dirty. Well, they started this whole thing with this one-and-done scenario. They're implicated in it also. And I'll answer any question you ask me, but let's tell it like it is. Everybody's involved. Everybody's making a lot of money on these kids. Nobody's giving me a way to pay these kids, number one. I think we underestimate the value of a free education. I want to make that clear. But we got to do more for these kids. I'm a firm believer. I love the fact they get a free education. But we can't use the same play sheet when everything was a level playing field and nobody was making $1 billion a year on these players.
This is not going to go away. It's not going to go away quietly, and it's not going to go away pretty. I'm telling you right now, the University of Louisville could be looking at the death penalty for their basketball team. SMU is still not recovered from that win in football, and that was back in the early 80s. It's been 34 years since SMU got handed their death penalty, and they still haven't recovered. We'll see what's going to happen with Louisville. It's going to stay over the whole sport. for the next year or so while the NCAA and the FBI go into each of these schools and just dig and dig and dig. But we'll be talking about that ad nauseum for the next few months. But we're going to talk college football today. When we come back, we're going to go to the Rose Bowl. Colorado hopes to be there at the end of the season. We'll see. But they are playing there later today against the UCLA Bruins. We'll be talking to CU after the break. We'll also be talking to Tennessee, who takes on the Georgia Bulldogs later today. That's coming up right after the break. You're listening to the University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. University of Fish is back in session.
This is Joe Giuliano from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and you're listening to the University of Fish.
We're joined now by Josh Ward of WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee. Big game this week. Tennessee, Georgia in the SEC. That's always a big game. Josh, how you doing today?
Hey, doing well. Good to be with you.
Okay, now let's talk about Quentin Norman, Dormady for a second. I always want to call him Normandy, but Dormady, Quentin Dormady, quarterback for the Tennessee Volunteers. Six TDs this year. That's good. The four he's given away, not so good. What does he have to do against the Bulldog defense later today to come back with a victory to Knoxville?
Yeah, Quentin needs to take care of the football, first of all. He needs to figure out ways to get the ball to Marquez Callaway, a wide receiver, Brandon Johnson at wide receiver, Tyler Bird, John Kelly, Tennessee's running back, is very involved in the passing game as well. So is the tight end, Ethan Wolf, who appears ready to go after having an injury scare last week. There are options within the passing game, but Quentin Dormady needs to be better. He just does. And he needs to trust his offensive line. They need to block better. That's part of it, too. Quentin's had a habit of throwing off his back foot, and that's led to accuracy issues. Quentin can throw a good football. He just needs to have the right footwork, the right mechanics to do so.
You've talked about his receiving core. Let's talk about the rushing game. John Kelly already with 450 yards this season, six touchdowns. Is it going to take a good showing from Kelly and the rest of the backs to win there in Knoxville today?
Tennessee will need a good showing with its running game. It'll need John Kelly to run well. I think the freshman Ty Chandler could be involved in that regard as well. But really it's about consistent running. If Tennessee can break some big runs, that would be great. But it's about first down. They'll probably run the football fairly often. Can they be productive there? Can they get 3, 4, 5 yards to where they're setting up second and more manageable, third and short situations? Because if not, Tennessee's going to have a difficult time extending drives. Tennessee needs to be in a position where it's not asking the offensive line to protect a rush that it knows is coming from Georgia when Georgia knows Tennessee has to throw in third and long situations. So I think it's about consistent running of the football, but for sure, John Kelly's probably Tennessee's best player. They need him to have a big game against a big opponent.
Now let's flip the field and talk about Georgia for a second. Now, Jacob Eason came in as a, you know, starting the season. Hey, he's going to be great. He only got to throw three passes before he got hurt. Jake Fromm has stepped in. He's throwing good. He's got seven TDs, one interception. What does the Volunteer defense have to do to shut down Fromm and the Georgia Bulldogs?
Well, I think it starts with trying to slow Georgia's running game, which sounds like a really difficult task considering how good Georgia has been running the football and how much of a difficult time Tennessee's had trying to stop it. But if Tennessee can slow down Georgia's rushing attack and put Jake Fromm in a position where he has to throw the football more, Georgia's done a great job of running the football and putting Fromm in a position where he doesn't have to do too much. If Georgia has to rely on him more and Tennessee knows it can attack and get some pressure in the backfield, then perhaps the freshman quarterback could make a mistake. He's played one road game to this point, and it was at Notre Dame. There were also a good amount of Georgia fans that were there, so he had some support in that one. But Tennessee needs to get after the quarterback. If Georgia's able to run the football successfully, then Georgia doesn't have to ask too much of its young quarterback, and that's what Georgia wants. That's the best offensive game plan for the Bulldogs.
Okay, that's shutting down Jake Fromm, but how do you shut down Chubb Swift and Sony Michel? I mean, because you look at the three of them, well, Nick Chubb's been getting the greater part of the carries. He's already at about 60 carries, but both DeAndre Swift and Sony Michel are at 30 carries apiece, got a couple hundred yards on the season. How do you shut down that rushing game?
Yeah, I wish I had a good answer because Tennessee hasn't been able to shut down any running game to this point. Georgia Tech ran all over Tennessee. That's going to be an outlier when it comes to numbers and 535 yards, but Florida ran on Tennessee. UMass ran on Tennessee. Indiana State even had a little success against Tennessee. UMass outrushed Tennessee in Neyland Stadium last week. That gives you an indication of some of the issues Tennessee's rush defense has had. So I don't know. Maybe Bob Shoup, Tennessee's defense coordinator, can come up with some blitz packages, some rush blitz that could help. But I don't feel good about Tennessee's chances in slowing down Georgia's running defense or Georgia's rushing side on the offensive side of the football. And Tennessee does get Shaitel back, a defensive tackle. That helps because he's a guy that can push the interior of the offensive line. But I don't know that he's enough. But Tennessee has to be a lot better. The reason I'm struggling to come up with an answer is because Bob Shoup has struggled to this point to come up with an answer.
Well, we're talking with Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville, Tennessee. I know the Volunteer Navy will be out in force today. And thank you, Josh, for joining us in the university today.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
Colorado started off Pac-12 play not how they really wanted to against Washington. We saw what happened last week. Let's see what happens this week as they travel to L.A. to go to the Rose Bowl there in Pasadena, hoping to make a return trip there later in the year. But what happens this week will go a long way to deciding that. We're joined right now by Neil Welk with CUBuffs.com. Neil, how you doing today?
Doing really well. How are you?
Just fine. Tough game against Washington, but it's nothing we didn't see last year against Washington. Any takeaways from that game?
You know, I think, you know, on the surface, it was just eerily similar to what they did against Washington a year ago. Washington outscored them 27-3 in the Pac-12 title game, outscored them 27-3 in the second half of this game. Quarterback threw three interceptions in the title game, quarterback threw three interceptions in this game. But I think, you know, but beyond the numbers, there's definitely some difference. Colorado was in this game well into the third quarter. It's 17-10 midway through the third quarter. CU throws a pick six, and then all of a sudden, it's, you know, the game gets away from them. They moved the ball really well, especially in the first half. Their defense played better. Washington wore them down. So I think the takeaway is that Colorado is a little closer to playing with the elite teams, you know, in the nation, but they've still got a ways to go.
Now, when you look at Montez and Lindsey, a great quarterback, a great running back, but especially when you look at Montez, it's the turnovers. He's got a 1-to-1 ratio, touchdowns to interceptions, 6 TDs on the year, which means obviously 6 interceptions as well. What does he have to do against this UCLA defense that we've seen exposed, especially against Memphis?
Yeah.
We saw the same thing against Texas A&M, even though they did have that comeback to start off the season. What does Stephen have to do this week against that Bruin defense?
You know, he just got to play a little bit smarter. I mean, Mike McIntyre, you know, broke it down to the very simplest of terms. He's got to quit throwing to the guys in the wrong colored jerseys, you know. And that's what he has to do. You know, Stephen was, if you look at the stats even from the Washington game, he was 21 of 27. He made some really nice throws. He was moving the ball up and down the field. And then he made two really bad mistakes. Just he got buzzed by the nickel back on one interception. Never saw the guy coming. They disguised the coverage on him. He's got to learn how to read those coverages a little bit better. He's got to learn how to make a few better decisions. And the other thing he has to do is Stephen is terrific at making something out of nothing. But as Mike McIntyre said, once in a while you have to take nothing. Just walk away, take a play, throw the incompletion, and move on. And Stephen has to learn that that's what he's going to have to do on some occasions. If he does that, you know, I think he's still growing up. He's a sophomore. He started, you know, all of 7 games. People kind of forget that because he was such an impactful player a year ago. I think this year he's learning. He's getting better. You're right. This is a big, big test for him. He's got a chance to put up a lot of yards, and the running game has a chance to put up a lot of yards. UCLA gave up 400 and something rushing yards to Stanford last week. So this is a great chance for the offense to get better.
Well, I mean, Philip Lindsay's good. I don't know if he's Bryce Love good, and he doesn't have the speed of Bryce Love, but Lindsay is a good runner. But is the offensive line going to be able to penetrate enough and actually keep the penetration away to get Lindsay off on the corners?
Yeah, I think they will. I think, you know, they've played well against UCLA the last couple of years. It's been a really interesting series, actually, over the last three. You know, a couple of years ago, Colorado went out there. UCLA was ranked 24th in the nation, I believe. Colorado ran for 250, 60 yards on them, ended up losing 35-31. You know, so I think this offensive line is coming around. They had some moments against Washington. UCLA's defense is by no means, you know, anything compared to Washington. They have a tendency to give up some big yards. Obviously, like you said, Phillip Lindsay is not Bryce Love, but Phillip Lindsay is a really good running back. I think, you know, this is a chance for the offense, yeah, to put up some yards, and I think it's a chance for Phillip to kind of bust loose and have that 150, 200-yard game.
Now, the defense did a great job of shutting down Jake Browning, only threw 160 yards, and he had a touchdown and a pick. But I think that, and I think most people will agree, that the Rosen one's a little bit better than Jake Browning. So what's that? Does the defense have the same kind of performance this week, or do they have to step it up?
You know, I think the defense can play well against Josh Rosen. You know, I think this defense, their goal this week, they know Josh Rosen's going to throw 50 passes. I mean, he's averaging 50 passes, 440 yards, and four touchdowns a game. He's throwing the ball, like I said. The last two games, he's averaged more than 60 passes a game. So what they have to do is they have to make sure that he doesn't go up top on him. Make him move the ball down the field if he's going to throw. Make him take the 7-yard throw, not the 47-yard throw. Josh still makes some mistakes. I think he's got four interceptions in the last couple of weeks. You know, you can still pick off a pass. If he throws 60 times, you should be able to get a couple of those. And if you can stop those drives, get the ball to your offense and you know, make them go back to the air, yeah, I think they can play well. I like Colorado's secondary. It may not be as talented as last year's, but it's very close. Isaiah Oliver might be one of the best cornerbacks in the nation. At least that's what the pro scouts who are at practice tell me. And so I think that this is a great test for the defense. I like Colorado's secondary a lot. And so I think they can play with these guys. I think they can make this, you know, a good game.
Well, we'll have to see how the game goes later today to see if Colorado is a step closer to trying to get that return trip to Pasadena this week. Because playing in the Rose Bowl is always good, but when you're doing it in early October, it's not the same as doing it there on New Year's Day. Neil Welk with CUBuffs.com, thank you for joining the university this morning. And as the Buffs progress through the season, look forward to talking to you again.
Hey, anytime. Give me a shout. Appreciate it.
That's two of the biggest games that are coming up later today, but the biggest game today has got to be Clemson and Virginia Tech. When we come back after the break, we'll be checking in with writers from both schools right here on the University of Fish on Extra Sports 1300.
Everyone, back in your seats. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
I'm Angelique Shingelis from the Detroit News. I cover Michigan football, and I listen to the University of Fish. And I hope to be a graduate by the end of the season.
Okay, the biggest game of the week has to be Virginia Tech hosting the defending national champions, the Clemson Tigers. We're on the phone right now with Danny Noakes from Super Sports 101.7 in Blacksburg. Danny, how you doing today?
I'm doing good, Tim. Thanks so much for having me, man. Excited for a massive showdown here in Blacksburg this weekend.
Oh, it's going to be a great game now. And when we look at what West Virginia's done so far, 4-0, and, you know, a tough game the first week of the season against a great, but a good West Virginia team, and then really no contest throughout the rest of the season. But then again, it was Delaware, East Carolina, and Old Dominion. But now you're facing your stiffest test of the year, and probably the stiffest test you see all year in the Clemson Tigers. Looking back at what the Hokies have done so far, what do they have to work on to be competitive against Clemson?
I would say that there's currently a lot that you have to be at pretty much your best at if you're going to go toe-to-toe with the Clemson Tigers, Tim. You know, Virginia Tech has actually done really well this season to improve on what they had going last year despite losing so many players on the offensive side of the ball, starting with their starting quarterback, Jerod Evans, insert redshirt freshman Josh Jackson, who is playing at a level that you wouldn't expect a redshirt freshman to play at. He showed that in the very first game of the season on the national stage in an NFL stadium against West Virginia, like you said. Hokies come away with a win there. But over the last couple of weeks, I would say the biggest thing that they're trying to figure out is to stay consistent, because they've had a couple of slow starts. You saw it against Delaware, not really against East Carolina. Their offense was humming early. They just put a couple of big touchdowns through for the Pirates, but then they cleaned it up. But then again, against ODU, you know, they were kind of slow offensively out of the gate. They can't afford that against a team like Clemson. If you go back to the 2016 ACC championship game, Tech fell behind 14-0. They were able to get back into that game and only lose by 7 because they had a fake punt that goes for a first down. They used some momentum there, but I just don't think that they can fall behind early in this game against a team like Clemson. And with a defense like that, it's already going to be so hard to move the ball.
It is going to be hard. And you're talking about Josh Jackson, who has been very good with protecting the ball, thrown 11 touchdowns on the season, but only one interception, over 1,100 yards so far through the season. So he's averaging just about almost 300 a game. Has that been the biggest surprise, or is it the stable of running backs? You've got four people, including Jackson, to have more than 30 carries already this season.
That's true, and they're always going to be going with a rotating backfield, I think, with Coach Fuente and Coach Cornelson's offense. They're just going to try and get as many fresh legs in there as possible. But the thing about Josh Jackson is, yes, he's a redshirt freshman, but for those of us that have kind of been following the program for the last couple of years, we've been aware of his upbringing, and he's actually much more developed mentally, and that has a lot to do with, as I said, his upbringing. His father spent a lot of time on the Michigan staff in the 90s. So he's been around football and football being played at a very high level throughout his entire life. So I think that he's kind of been prepared for this moment. And when he was named the starter, I think it was about 2 weeks or so before the season started, maybe a little bit less than that, that he was not fazed at all. He actually got a call, Tim, from Tom Brady the week leading up to West Virginia, dipping into his father's old contacts from being on the Michigan staff. So I think he's a guy that's going to have a lot of success this year. He's clearly playing more mature than he actually is, but it's another massive test, as we said, going up against the defense, and then he's going to be on the national stage again.
Well, let's talk about what the Hokie defense is going to have to do, because, you know, everybody's wondering what Clemson is going to have a quarterback this year with Deshaun Watson leaving. Kelly Bryant, the first couple games of the season, looked like a world beater. Came back down to earth a little bit this last week against BC. A slow start for them. Yeah, they did pull away there at the end. But when you're tied up through three quarters with BC, that's got to give the Hokies some hope.
It definitely does. And I actually caught the end of that Boston College game after I got home from the Tech ODU game last Saturday, Tim. And I locked in because it was a close game. It was coming right down to the wire. Boston College, in and of itself, has a very strong defense. We talked to one of their All-American players, Harold Landry, a couple of months ago at the ACC kickoff. So they have a good defense. And that score was not reflective of the way that game actually went. And I think a lot of it is because Kelly Bryant, looks like Josh Jackson, but I don't even think he's doing it at as high a level as Jackson is. Learning the offense, he's still kind of trying to figure things out. He's trying to, you know, find a rhythm with his receivers and whatnot. But the thing is, Kelly Bryant is no Deshaun Watson. He's a good player, and I expect him to make some plays against Virginia Tech in their own stout defense on Saturday. But I think if Virginia Tech can get the pressure on him, he'll start to make mistakes. He is a junior, so he's got some experience, but he's more of a runner. He's not that stand in the pocket type passer that Deshaun Watson was, at least not quite as good at this point in his career. So I would say put the pressure on him early and force some turnovers. The turnover differential is a big spot where Virginia Tech can win the game on Saturday.
Okay, well, we're talking with Danny Noakes of Super Sports 101.7. Looking at the schedule, we'll probably be talking to you again later this year because the Hokies are playing some good ball. Danny, thanks for joining the university this morning.
Absolutely, Tim. Thanks so much for having me.
We're joined once again, almost like a weekly appearance, for Eric Boynton from Spartanburg, South Carolina, getting ready to make the short drive, relatively short drive, up to Blacksburg, Virginia for the Saturday night game against Virginia Tech. Clemson, Virginia Tech, under the lights in Blacksburg. I don't think Corso's on the call, so don't have to worry about a lightning storm up there if you remember that Thursday night game years ago. But Eric, how you doing today?
Doing great. Thanks again for having me.
It's always a pleasure to have you on the University of Fish. Now, let's look at last week before we jump into this week. Clemson had a little more of a difficult struggle than one would expect last week.
You know, they did. And you know, just a master over these last handful of years of keeping with what he says is that called the windshield mentality, where it's all about what's directly in front of you. They don't look behind. They don't look too far ahead. He's done a great job of not having them overlook any kind of competition. But, you know, we're dealing with 18 to 20, 22-year-old guys and, you know, two straight weeks of primetime top 15 matchups with Auburn and Louisville. And all the, and then next week is, you know, coming up Saturday, as you mentioned, number 12, a visit to number 12 Virginia Tech. So to have a Boston College team that had been blown out by Notre Dame the week before, and just, you know, not a very talented team. And I think you can make the argument that, that Clemson, for one of the rare times, you know, not to take anything away from Boston College, who played a very physical game, switched up some things defensively, gave Clemson some looks they weren't expecting, and confused them a little bit. But I think you can make the argument Clemson wasn't quite as focused, wasn't this kind of sandwich game, trap game, to use the old term, may have caught them a little bit there.
Yeah, so, but let's, okay, but they didn't get caught. They almost did. But let's move on to this week. Virginia Tech, Josh Jackson's looked pretty good there at quarterback. He's got a little over 1,100 yards, 65% of his passes, an 11-1 TD to interception ratio. But Clemson's got that big defense. Can they get to him enough to make him make a bad throw?
Well, absolutely. And the thing with Jackson, being a redshirt freshman, I mean, they did play West Virginia. I think to open the season, so that's a pretty, you know, pretty strong competition. Other than that, they've been heavy favorites in their other three wins. A couple of them were blowouts when they shut out some overmatched competition. So, Cam Jackson off to an outstanding start so far. And yeah, that's going to be the key to the ball game. He's obviously making great decisions. He's got Cam Phillips, one of the better wide receivers in the league. They have three running backs, all with over 30 carries so far, so they can keep guys fresh, rotate guys in. They obviously have a solid stable of runners. So, this will be interesting to see how Jackson is able to react to, you know, one of the nation's best defenses, arguably the nation's top front four. And as you mentioned, can they get to him? Can they put pressure on him? This will be by far the biggest test for the redshirt freshman. And as most games, you know, this will be one in the trenches. And Clemson's got the kind of defense where you're not going to put up a lot of points, and probably especially not from a young quarterback that's not used to being in a primetime game day visiting, you know, 8 p.m. situation like this.
Yeah, and when you mention that stable of running backs that Virginia Tech has, you have to include Josh Jackson in it because he's not afraid to get out of the pocket and run the ball. He's averaging 4.5 yards a carry, and that does factor in all his sacks as well. So you've got to watch out for the dual threat quarterback, which Clemson hasn't really seen this year. They've seen it on their side, but they haven't seen it on the other side.
Right. Well, they did have Lamar Jackson 2 weeks ago.
Dual
threat in the league. Yeah. So that, and they did a great job. I mean, Jackson wound up putting up semi-respectable statistics, but then again, they had the guy in inexplicably late in the game. I guess just trying to either make the score more respectable or help his Heisman defense by putting up some late stats in a blowout game against the third string defense. But they have seen Jackson, you know, so they have plan for the dual threat before, and again, Clemson's got so much speed along with the girth and the power up front, and a guy in Brent Venables, it's been, I know they're not running the option, but as far as, you know, running attacks, he said no one's had better success against Georgia Tech in the option game than Brent Venables has as the defensive coordinator. So he's the guy that's usually real, real good at scheming something up for the dual threat guys back there, the guys that can scramble, make things happen. They're always the toughest to defend. And they've got a pretty good track record at that. So, the one place Clemson's banged up right now, they're a little bit banged up in the secondary. They had a couple of guys go out against Boston College. They've shifted a youngster over from safety over to cornerback. And so they've got a little bit of an injury issue right now in the secondary. So if they're vulnerable anywhere, you think that maybe Jackson can get the ball downfield to Cam Phillips or some of his other receivers and maybe hurt Clemson with some, if not some deep balls, maybe make some key throws, 15 to 20 yards down the field. That may be where Clemson's vulnerable. But as we talked about earlier, if he doesn't have time to throw the ball or if he's if it's in disarray in the backfield, if Clemson's able to get the pressure on them, it's going to make it awfully difficult on the young quarterback.
Okay, we were talking about the Virginia Tech offense. Let's talk about the Clemson offense for a second, because starting off the season, Kelly Bryant, everybody was worried, okay, Deshaun Watson's gone, what do we have now? Kind of took a step back last week. You can't expect him to be a world beater each and every week, but he does have the three picks and only two touchdowns on the year. Is that a concern at all?
I don't think they're real concerned. He definitely, for the first time all year, you know, as you mentioned, without the experience, he had really had no idea what to expect out of him, those outside of Clemson's facility. Now, Dabo Sweeney loved what he saw all over the summer in preseason practices and said, man, if this guy could take, you know, even half of what he's shown us on the practice fields in the games and, you know, could play that well, we're going to be okay. And he's done that and more. And Boston College last week was really the first time that he looked a little confused, a little bit out of sorts, got a little flustered back there, didn't necessarily make the best decisions. A lot of people before the season were afraid that in the first moment there was some issues, or he'd make just one check down, tuck the ball and run. And he's been real good being poised in the pocket. Last week he was more about tucking the ball and getting out of there rather than, I think he had a season-high 23 carries last week. Now, he did go over 100 yards, so that was a plus. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see if he bounces back. It was definitely a great coachable game for him to, after he had a nice start, to show him, hey, you didn't play well at all in this game, and let's show you some of the, you know, you didn't do well and need to improve on. But one of the great pluses we saw at Clemson last week was Boston College, again, came in, wanted Clemson to beat them through the air, wanted to make Clemson beat them through the air and forced them to run the ball and stay patient and weren't going to give up any big plays. And Clemson was able to get almost 350 yards on the ground. And we saw just another breakout game from Travis Etienne. Now, fans all over the country are going to get to know this guy's name by year end. A true freshman they were able to pluck out of LSU's backyard at the last minute. And, you know, he just hasn't been able to get a great amount of touches because he's still learning the scheme and the blocking schemes and all that sort of good stuff. But he is an absolute dynamic player, and he came in and had almost 100 yards on his final five carries of a tight ball game in the fourth quarter last week, including a 50-yard run that pretty much put it away. So to see him take a step forward and the way the running game was clicking, that was definitely a huge positive on a day when their quarterback finally looked out of sorts for the first time in his four career starts.
It's going to be a great game tonight later in Blacksburg under the lights. Their game day is there. You're going to be there. Enjoy your drive through the Smokies today. The fall colors are starting to pop. I know it's a beautiful drive from Spartanburg up to Blacksburg. Eric Boynton, thank you for joining us once again.
Thanks so much as always. I really appreciate it.
It's time to be done talking about the game. It's time now to pick the game. When we come back here on the University of Fish, it's time for Fish's Picks right here on Extra Sports 1300.
Let's take a step out on the quad. Professor Fish is giving a lecture.
I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, and I'm listening to the University of Fish.
It is that time. It's time for Fish's Picks. Now, usually, just kind of like game day, we have a celebrity picker. Today, we're using that term very, very loosely. Today, my guest picker kind of flaked out on me, but that's okay. She's a busy, busy woman. But we have this week, for you, especially for you, the host of Drive Time Sports. You hear him every Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, right here on Extra Sports 1300. We called a high school game together last night, and you'll hear him right after this show on the other football show. I've got to be talking about the one, the only, the Ginger Ninja. It is Ryan Kaufman. Ryan, how you doing this morning?
I am great. I feel like we have spent enough time together.
We really have, so we'll burn through these picks, and we'll be done with each other at least for the weekend.
Few hours anyway.
Just to recap last week for you, if you're betting with me, even though I'm telling you not to because my wife gets mad at me when I lose, but if you're betting with me, you're not losing this season. Last week, 7-3, so you made some money last week if you went along with my picks. And if you were listening to Drive Time Sports yesterday, you heard my bold prediction for the weekend, and it was that Washington State would beat USC. Coach Mike Leach last night said the scene was like Woodstock, except people had their clothes on. So let's get to these picks this week. We're going to start off with our local team, the Air Force Falcons. They traveled down to New Mexico to take on the Lobos. It's a pick 'em game, Ryan. How do you see it?
Well, I think that Air Force always has issues with New Mexico because New Mexico plays a very similar style of football, so there's not a ton of preparation that Bob Davies' team has to do versus other teams. So that is difficult. The game is in Albuquerque, and this team still hasn't figured out how to get Tim McVay the ball. All the discussion that we have been doing about how Tim McVay's not touching the football, and he gets 7 carries last week against San Diego State, doesn't touch the ball till what I believe into the fourth quarter or late in the third. So Air Force has got to really show me something today. I'm taking New Mexico at home.
Okay, well, not so fast, my friend. I've got to go with Air Force because they are battle-tested. They've taken on a very good San Diego State team, close loss, played Michigan really tough in the big house. And since the New Mexico quarterback had the Air Force Academy and New Mexico in a ragged Saints hat and pulled out New Mexico, I've got to go with it. With the home team, our home team, not the home team, because that'd be New Mexico. I'm going with the Air Force Falcons. Next, we travel to College Station. They're right there, College Station, Bryan, Texas. The Texas A&M Aggies giving up 9 points to the visiting South Carolina Gamecocks. The head ball coach isn't there anymore. It's Will Muschamp, but how do you see it?
I think that I can't decide whether Texas A&M exposed Mississippi State or it was just a really good win. I feel like getting 9 at home is a little much. I mean, I'll take South Carolina.
Taking the Gamecocks, well, they're playing at Kyle Field, and Kyle Field registers as an earthquake when the fans get going there. I think it's going to be too much for the Cox. You got to take Texas A&M, even giving up the 9, because they've shown they put up some points quickly like they did in the second half against UCLA. But then again, actually, UCLA put the points up quickly in that game. But they can put up some points. They've been inconsistent, but they'll be consistent enough today. Sumlin doesn't get Kiffin today because he doesn't have to get on a plane, but he will get the win and giving up the 9. Vanderbilt traveling to the swamp, which is finally starting to dry out after Hurricane Irma. Florida giving up 10 points at home against Vandy. Not going to see the run game that they saw last week against Alabama, but is it the K-State Vandy team that shows up, or is it the Alabama team?
I'm not entirely sure. I'm just worried about how many players Florida has suspended for this game. But that being said, I'll still take the Gators, even minus giving the 10 to the Commodores.
Because Florida can outrun the ball the way Alabama can, or even K-State. K-State can move the ball on the ground. Vanderbilt will play enough defense to keep it close. They'll keep it close. Vanderbilt getting the 10 points at the swamp. Yes, it's not in the friendly confines of Nashville, but they will get they'll get the loss, but they will cover for Vanderbilt. Iowa. Traveling up to East Lansing to take on Sparty. Sparty coming off the loss to Notre Dame. Iowa coming off the loss to Penn State. Michigan State giving up 3 points. How do you see it?
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but the fact that Michigan State is giving 3 points is basically home field advantage.
Pretty much,
I mean,
yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
So it's in terms of the matchup, it's about straight up. So you know what? I'll take Iowa. Penn State's a really good football team, and I don't think it's a referendum on the Hawkeyes. Meanwhile, Michigan State, Notre Dame's not that good. I will take Iowa plus the 3 at East Lansing.
That's a good pick, my friend. I don't know why I'm trying to do Corso this morning. But, no, Iowa played a much better team last week in a loss. Michigan State, Coach D'Antoni does not have them back yet. This will be further proof of that. Iowa will get the win straight up. So given the 3 points, you gotta take them when Iowa's getting points because Iowa can play some tough defense. Kirk Ferentz and the boys gets the win outright. And so you got to take the Hawkeyes. Wisconsin and Northwestern. Wisconsin's at home in Madison, giving up 15 points to the Wildcats. Yeah, I know.
That's a lot. I mean, Wisconsin is a superior team. There's no doubt about that. But 15 points in a conference matchup, and that's just too much for me. I got to take Northwestern.
I hate agreeing with you, but Wisconsin has nobody on their schedule. They've played nobody yet. The three toughest games they have all year is today against Iowa at home and then Michigan. That is all that they have really on their schedule because it's littered with Illinois, Maryland, all these teams in the Big Ten. They don't have to face Ohio State. They don't have to face Penn State. 15 points is way too much. Wisconsin's offense hasn't shown me anything this year because they've played nobody. So take the Northwestern Wildcats getting 15 points. Another kind of local team, just right up I-25 and then off on 36, of course. The CU Buffs traveling to the Rose Bowl may have a slight aspiration of getting back there in January. I don't see that happening. They're taking on Josh Rosen, Mora, and the UCLA Bruins in their powder blues. UCLA is giving up 7 points in this game.
Yeah, I don't know that UCLA has the defense to turn Steven Montez over as much as Washington did, but I believe in Josh Rosen more than I believe in Jake Browning. And I think that Jim Mora, that seat that he's sitting on, is getting a little bit warmish. I think UCLA, now, is this a game that's going to save Jim Mora's job? No, but I do think it is a game that UCLA needs to win, and I think they will win, and I think they will do it by a couple of touchdowns, so I'll take UCLA.
Okay, now, Rosen, much better quarterback than Browning.
Mm-hmm.
And Colorado held Browning in check.
Mm-hmm.
Washington did run the ball all over Colorado, but being at the Rose Bowl, there's a special feeling about that. UCLA plays much better at home than they do on the road. You've got to take the Bruins. The Bruins, like you said, will probably win by a couple touchdowns because Josh Rosen won't turn the ball over as much as he has in the past couple weeks. Take the Bruins, giving up the 7. Georgia, a 7.5-point favorite, traveling to Neyland Stadium. Tennessee, Georgia, how you see it?
I love Tennessee in this game. I might take, if this was a pick'em game, I might take Tennessee. I'm certainly going to take them getting 7.5 at home. I'll take Tennessee all day long, and I'll take them right here on Extra Sports 1300 at 1 o'clock.
Okay, now since that game is on our air, and you heard us talk with Josh Ward from our sister station in Knoxville, WNML, he was talking about how Tennessee cannot stop the run. We know that. We saw Georgia Tech in the opening weekend game put 500 yards plus on them in rushing alone. You've got Sony Michel. You've got that whole stable of backs, Nick Chubb. You've got to take Georgia, even without Easton at quarterback. Fromm's been doing a great job. 7.5 points is not enough to keep me away from the Bulldogs. Take the Bulldogs on the road. Mississippi State, speaking of Bulldogs, taking on the Auburn Tigers on the plains there in southeast Alabama. Auburn giving up 9.5 points. How do you like this one?
Like I said, I can't figure out whether Texas A&M exposed Mississippi State. I'll say for now they did not, and I will take Mississippi State plus the 9.5.
Auburn has no offense. They showed that against Clemson. They showed that in the Sugar Bowl last year against Oklahoma. Everybody's going, well, Auburn's going to be good. No, they played against a horrible defense last year in Oklahoma, and they got exposed. The offense hasn't had a whole lot of changes. They've just gotten a year older. They're still not good. 9.5 points, got to take the Bulldogs from Stark Vegas. You got to take the Bulldogs. Oklahoma State, 9.5-point favorites, going to Texas Tech. Strange things happen in Lubbock. You going with the young buck? In Kingsbury or the mullet. He's 50 now.
Yeah, I know Oklahoma State will be perturbed after the TCU game last week, but that's a lot of points to be giving a solid football team at Texas Tech. I'll call them solid. So I'll take the Red Raiders plus the 9.5.
9.5 points is a lot of points, especially since almost every game that's in Lubbock turns out to be a shootout. But I saw what Houston did against Texas Tech last week. I think the combination of Mason Rudolph and James Washington is going to be way too much for Kingsbury's defense, which is normally non-existent. It's going to seem that way again today. Oklahoma State giving up 9.5. You still got to take the Cowboys, especially after the loss to TCU. Now, the biggest game of the week has got to be Clemson, Virginia Tech. We're running short on time. So, Hokies, Tigers in Blacksburg.
I thought Louisville was going to be a test for Clemson. It really wasn't. I'm not going to say that Virginia Tech will be. I'll take Clemson even minus 7.5.
Blacksburg under the lights in, I mean, Blacksburg's a special, special place. 7.5. You know what? Clemson kind of got exposed a little bit for the first three quarters against BC last week. I'm going to take Virginia Tech getting the 7.5 points at home. And you know what? That's what we got this week.
We're going to be different.
Right? We are going to be different. See, that's what I want. I like beating people. I like beating people. And as Ryan knows, I like tearing down people.
That's
so
right.
We'll see how it happens this week. Coming up right after this, you're going to hear more of the Ginger Ninja talking the other football show coming up here on Extra Sports 1300. Don't forget, 1 o'clock today, you've got the Tennessee and Georgia game, and then tonight, do the Rockies clinch live here on Extra Sports 1300? We'll find out later today. I'm the professor. Class dismissed.
Bob Pincus celebrating their 60th anniversary in Southern Colorado.
KCSF AM HD1 Colorado Springs.